Bitcoin is a protocol that decentralizes payments on the internet. And this week we are sidestepping from that protocol to talk about another one. Nostr is a protocol for decentralizing social media. And we are joined by special guest Will Casarin from Damus, which is an application that enables people to interact with the Nostr protocol. I'm Scott Dietels. I'm the CEO and founder of Block Rewards. A part of our mission in bringing Bitcoin to the workplace is helping people understand how it will help them. Nostr is a peek into the future of how decentralization expands beyond the world of Bitcoin into every aspect of how we interact online. And it is an exciting thing to look forward to and think about how it could make things be different. So if you're interested to learn something about how social media could be decentralized in the future, stick around. I learned a lot in this one. All right, welcome to another episode of the Block Reward Podcast. This week we are joined by special guest William Casarin from Damus. Thanks for joining the show, Will.
Hey there, thanks for having me.
So we are taking a slight departure from the regular Bitcoin content of the show this week to talk about an innovation that is happening, sort of like tangential, I guess, in the Bitcoin space with Nostr and the decentralization of the internet. Maybe firstly, can I just ask your 80,000 foot view of what is Nostr?
Yeah, so I think the best way that I could probably describe it is Nostr is a way to decentralize social media, for one. So that's like the first thing that people think about is, you know, when you go online, like how do you own your data? How do you control your data? How do you control your presence online without having to be under the boot of like some corporation or some government that says you're not allowed to say this, you're not allowed to post this? So Nostr kind of takes back your free speech online via protocols. And in the same way that Bitcoin kind of gives you that for money via protocols. So we're trying to do the same thing with social media.
So how does it work?
So it's actually pretty simple. It's actually a lot simpler than Bitcoin. So if you think of it in the traditional model, when you're like, let's say, sending out a tweet or to X these days, you're talking to a single server and typically a company controls that server and they can say what you're allowed to say. They can remove posts. And so they have complete control over everything that you post there. Same thing with Instagram, same thing with every other social media, which is why you see people get taken down if they, you know, they say the wrong thing, especially if it's against like the government or something. Because ultimately these companies, they have to follow the laws. So if you say something that the government doesn't like, they can take you down. And we're starting to see that even on Instagram in Canada, where, you know, you can't even like run a news thing on Instagram. They won't even show it, which is kind of ridiculous. So the way that it works is instead of posting to a single server, you send out a post over this protocol to multiple servers controlled by different people. And then if one of your followers wants to fetch your posts, they can look at one of those like 10 servers run by different people. And then if one of those, or let's say two of those, or three of those, or four of those people, or sorry, four of those servers censor you, it doesn't really matter because they can still get your posts on the other four servers, let's say. So basically it's a very simple model. You're just sending it to more than one server controlled by different people. And since it's a protocol, anyone can run a server, can run your own server. So if you're a very controversial figure, you can host all your nodes on your own server and everyone can set up their client to fetch notes from that server. So that might be slightly technical, but it's the kind of the gist of it.
So in this case, I guess how you're describing a server, you know, I guess a question for me would be, I'm thinking of servers in the traditional sense of like the server that you might have for your office. Is it more analogous to say that in this case, a server is like a node in the Bitcoin network where you're operating your own set of the rules?
It's definitely more like a server because a Bitcoin node it's really a node in the truest sense that it's, when people talk about nodes, they typically mean like peer-to-peer. So your Bitcoin nodes talk to other Bitcoin nodes. You know, that's why there's like BitTorrent nodes, but this is more of a client-server model. So the clients are talking to a server. I mean, it's just not talking to one server, it's talking to multiple servers. So it's a little bit different. There's not many other examples that are like this where it's not quite the full peer-to-peer route, but we like to say that because it's not peer-to-peer that it's more reliable. Because peer-to-peer can be pretty unreliable sometimes. Sometimes your other nodes go offline, but in a client-to-many server model, you have much more reliability and you can have high-performance servers, which is important if there's a lot of people on it and posting.
Where did all of this start? Like for me, sort of like casually observing, I'm not super into social media myself anyways, so like I am definitely anti the censorship of social media, but not enough that I would want to go and build an alternative myself. So how did all this start?
Well, I probably started because I'm addicted to social media and Twitter. and I saw a lot of my friends, a lot of interesting people were getting censored and banned off certain platforms. And it just felt wrong. I felt like this shouldn't be possible because communication and speech is such a fundamental human thing, right? Like when I go over to my friend's house, I'm having like a conversation over the dining room table. I don't have like some moderator that's stepping in every time I have a conversation that's saying, you're allowed to say this, you're not allowed to say this. So like this idea of like being able to like speak freely, especially in the digital realm, which I grew up on the internet. I spent a lot of time online and, you know, I was involved in a lot of spaces and like virtual spaces online, like IRC channels and like, you know, video games. And so this idea of like, where someone can just step in and say, you're allowed or not allowed to say this, it always seemed very, very, very wrong to me, especially if we want our digital spaces to be, you know, to reflect like, you know, the laws and things we have in the physical spaces. So anyway, so I've always been interested in protocols and Bitcoin. So it just made sense. Like, hey, why don't we try to figure out the best way to implement this in cyberspace where the individuals and the users have all the power, not the people who want to take control and who want to be able to control speech. Usually for, you know, kind of nefarious reasons a lot of the time, right? Like, especially we saw during the Twitter files on Twitter where, you know, we saw the government stepping in and trying to censor certain, you know, things and affect elections. And, you know, I think this shouldn't be possible. So there's a lot of like motivating reasons why you might want to build something like this.
Yeah. I remember, I think I'm no different from a lot of people. Like before 2020, I actually didn't really understand the kinds of censorship practices that were just totally normal on all these platforms that we all spend all this time on. And it's just it's a really strange thing how these, I guess they're the same as banks being able to sort of deplatform people financially, and there are things that everyone should have access to these services if they want to be participating members of society, but they're privately owned, and that creates like a bottleneck or a checkpoint on who's allowed to play.
Yeah, and a lot of time it's like, you know, they're private companies, so they always pull the, oh, well, I'm a private company, I can do anything I want, it's my servers, and they get a huge power trip out of this, right? It's like they get to control large parts of society, especially if large parts of society are using their app, right? They can influence people, change their minds. They can build algorithms that, you know, that change the way they vote, or that change the way that make them unhappy, or make them more addicted to the app itself, right? So these algorithms are making people unhappy. They're making people addicted to the apps. So they're making tons of money and they're happy and they don't really care how the individuals feel like a lot of the time. And they're getting this huge power trip out of being able to control so many people. Like it is kind of that sick. If you like see a lot of these people who are at these companies, that's their mindset. Like a lot of their mindset is like growth at all costs. We don't really care about the individual, and you know, we want to be able to, they're, you know, a lot of these tech workers, they think they're smarter than the rest of society, and they're like, oh, we know better, and we should be able to direct the stupid people to vote a certain way. And it's just like, it's a really twisted and dark view that, and all this has kind of been revealed in the past like 4 or 5 years or so. So I mean, that just emboldened me to continue working in this space, because I mean, I'm a Bitcoiner through and through. Like I worked on Core Lightning. A little of my backstory, like I got into Bitcoin 2010. So in here in Vancouver, I think we were in one of the first record, like I was working at a record label at the time called Monster Cat, which is here. And we're one of the first labels that sold music with Bitcoin in 2013. And then I quit that to work on Core Lightning and Lightning. And then, so it just made sense that I'm like, oh, I saw this social network thing. I want to make Lightning more popular. So let's see if I can integrate Lightning into the social network. And that's how Nostra got the Bitcoin Association, just because I was like, I integrated Zaps into it. But it's not necessarily a Bitcoin network. It's really a network for everyone.
Yeah, I want to come back to that other part. I mean, something you said earlier about kind of the twisted nature of these social media companies. I remember this maybe going back like almost 10 years watching the Shoshana Zuboff documentary, Surveillance Capitalism, and really having prior to that, like no inkling whatsoever for the sort of shadow economy of how much the data is worth on all these things, and how much manipulation happens as a result of the algorithm stuff. So there is no algorithm on Nostr. How, and I think I know the answer to this, but what controls what content people see?
So technically we have an algorithm. If you were to just naively implement the protocol, the algorithm is simply reverse chronological order. It's like the simplest possible algorithm. A lot of people just don't count that as an algorithm because it's too simple. Because you need to display it in some way. You're not going to display it in random order, even though that would be an algorithm. But it's usually what people see mean by algorithm. It's like they're choosing notes on your behalf to display it. So it's not that Nostr doesn't have algorithms. Just by default, most clients don't have one. There's not like, there's still some clients with lots of algorithms. Like Primal is a good example of a client that has an algorithm and they have trending notes. It's usually like the top influencers that they choose that day or something. So I don't know how their algorithm works. But that's the beautiful thing about Nostr, is that you can have no algorithm. You can have a predefined algorithm served by a client, or what I'm working on is an algorithm that you can plug in and swap out. So it's like a pluggable algorithm and maybe even a marketplace of algorithms that you can choose. And so, yeah, there's a lot of variety on Oster.
That's wild. So this is maybe a good question to ask next, since you mentioned Primal. And so maybe just could you walk me through how Oster is the protocol, and there are apps on top of that, which is how you interface, or like how somebody would interact with it. Damas is one of them. Primal would be another. How does that all work?
This is a very confusing thing when people first join, because they're used to apps being like the siloed thing where it's like you're joining Instagram, you're joining Twitter, and they don't communicate with each other, right? But due to the way that the protocol is set up, you can kind of think of the apps as just different front ends for like the underlying data. So the underlying data is stored on the servers, the relays. And then there's many different clients that kind of talk to those relays to get the data. The way I like to describe this is think of your email clients, let's say Outlook or Gmail, the underlying data, you can send it between those clients. Email, right? You can send an email from Gmail, you can send it to Outlook and vice versa. It's because there's like an underlying protocol called email, which facilitates all that. So it's the same idea in Oster, except, you know, instead of emails, we're sending these things called notes, which are these cryptographically signed pieces of data, which are very simple, and they're stored on the relay. So whenever you spawn, or whenever you start up Damas, Damas fetches down the same notes that Primal would fetch down. And we present them differently. Like Primal might present them as, with an algorithm, and Damas might not present them. So there's different presentations of this underlying data, but the data is shared between the different relays.
So then, and you mentioned compatibility with Lightning. You introduced this idea of zapping. Like what is a zap?
So the cool thing about Oster is that it's very extensible. Like zaps, like Lightning was not natively a part of Oster at all, right? But since there's the note format in Oster is very flexible, so you can, each note has this thing called a kind. I don't want to get too technical, but the kind just kind of labels, like, you can have different types of notes. So another examples of this are the reaction note, which is just like a like. There's also like a repost note. So these have different kind numbers. So a like would be kind 6, and like a repost would be kind 7. I might have mixed that up. The most common like tweet is kind 1, that's why it's number 1, but they're all these different notes that are stored on the relays. So I added another note called the zap note, which is kind 9735. And the way that it works is whenever your Lightning node receives a payment, it simply sends out that note to the relays, and then clients can pull down that note and it kind of represents a receipt of a payment on the Lightning node. So that's pretty cool, because whenever you click the zap button on a client, you can actually initiate a payment on the Lightning network. And if a Lightning node receives that payment, it can send out a note, a receipt of payment to the Oster network. And so what the end result of that is, when you look at a post, you can actually see all the Lightning payments that note has received. So it's a kind of a cool confluence of these two different protocols and mixing them together, but they're, you know, it's just an addition that I made to the network, and it wasn't really that hard to add. So I thought that was really cool that you can even extend the network like that.
Yeah, there's like a really cool, I guess, you know, following this story that's been on Twitter over the last weeks or months about the monetization, like how creators get paid for the traffic that they create. And in this case, it's just a much more sort of empowered and direct model where people actually, the money goes directly to the person who's making the action.
Big tech hates this, by the way. So like, okay, so advertisers hate this, and big tech hate this. Like right when I added the zap button to Damas, Apple like said, we're going to remove your app from the App Store in 7 days unless you remove this button. This is what most people remember Damas by, because it got like, you know, it ended up with like Jack Dorsey like tweeting at Tim Cook, and like there was like news articles and, you know, reporters calling me about it, because it is kind of petty. They still haven't really, the whole justification for it is never really made sense. It was just kind of an arbitrary decision. Like, I'm not violating any guidelines, because the guidelines say you're not allowed to sell content that is not using in-app purchases, but I'm not, a zap is not selling or buying content. You're really just, it's like a tip, right? So they're already stretching their guidelines just to kind of punish me for having Bitcoin in the app. So I don't know, it's all kind of BS.
Yeah, I guess, does Apple also, I mean, does it have anything to do with how Apple like is able to take a cut of everything that happens on their platform, and within Lightning, this they just don't really have a way to reach into that jar, or is that not?
I always said that like they could, you know, they could if they wanted to. They could set up a Lightning node, and I would happily split with them if they wanted to do that. But they never even provided me that as an option. Oh, by the way, other Oster clients are allowed to use it because they don't apply their guidelines evenly. So there's another app called NOSTUR, which is another Oster client on iOS, which has apps. And so I guess the reviewer just didn't think about it. Like, it's kind of silly. And then Primal got around it by, so Primal has apps, but their reasoning for allowing it was different from the reason that they banned it. So it's just the reviewers don't apply the guidelines, and it's such a shit show. And it's actually been really disappointing. And that's why I've been working on another cross-platform Oster client called NodeDeck, And that's going to be our multi-platform client, because I want to do more stuff as apps, but I can't because Apple kind of ties my hands unfairly, because even other clients are on iOS are allowed to do it. But yeah, they punish us for some reason.
What is the volume of Lightning traffic on Nostr like? Do you have any?
So I always like to tell the story of the like Lightning before Nostr, because my Lightning node probably had like 10 transactions a month, maybe even less, like if I was lucky. But when I launched Zaps, I think I'm up to like 300,000 Lightning transactions on my node. So that's just people zapping, like I probably, you know, me zapping. I think we brought down Wall of Satoshi when we launched Zaps, like their whole wallet was broken because everyone was using Wall of Satoshi. Albi went down recently when we hit 100K, when people started zapping a lot. So I like to think that Nostr kind of like showcased like one of the biggest strengths of Lightning, which is this idea of digital payments online. You know, people before were really focused on, you know, brick and mortar payments, which I always thought was like, okay, it's kind of cool, but will it ever take off? But you know, Bitcoin is internet money, and if we can showcase like where it can really shine on the internet, like so instead of a like on a tweet, you can actually zap people, like that would be insane. Like, what if there's like millions of people sending those zaps on a massive social network? This could actually really bring Bitcoin into like the main stage, into mainstream. And that was always my goal with Adamas, was to like showcase the power of Lightning Network, because I was working on it. I was working on the Lightning Network, and I really wanted to. I knew how scalable it was. So Adamas was kind of like a prototype, like. Test case of like, look, this can actually work. And so we just need to get more people in the system and trying it.
Yeah, that's so cool. Like, I wonder, so what do you think about the challenge? I guess I have a two-part question. For one, there's the obvious challenge of network effect. So, you know, when we're talking about Twitter specifically, like that's where, you know, the volume of people are. How do you see Nostr or other alternatives sort of like successfully pulling the conversation away? And then I guess part two would be, you know, what are the other challenges that face Nostr for broader adoption?
Yeah, so I think surprisingly, Nostr has a larger advantage at network effects than even like these largest centralized corporations. And that's simply because any new product and any new application that gets added to this network, it grows the network effect. I like to compare it to, imagine when I look at Nostr, I try to think of like the scope of the entire internet, like the web, the World Wide Web. I think of all the different apps and corporations and companies on that. Like that's way bigger than Twitter itself. So what Nostr represents is a new type of internet, a new type of web for interoperable application. And that could be like way bigger than just a simple, like, you know, Domus is just one use case of Nostr, which is microblogging. And that's typically what it's sold. Like Nostr is always sold as like the social media protocol, but in reality, it's actually, once you dig under layer, and I always like to, you know, say this afterwards because I don't want to scare people like when I first explained Nostr, but what we're actually really building is, yeah, again, it's like this new internet for interoperable social apps where you have a web of trust, you have these social graphs that you can bring with you to every app. You know, when you do a like in one app, it shows up in another app. It's going to be, so the network effects could be way, way bigger than Twitter. It's not right now. It's very small. Like we're way smaller than like even Blue Sky, but the potential is much, much higher, I think.
Yeah. You know, I was planning to ask about that. I was recently at the Adopting Bitcoin conference in El Salvador, and there was tons of Nostr content. And to be honest, for me personally, like prior to that, I really didn't realize this notion that microblogging is one of, you know, theoretically limitless applications for how the protocol can be applied. Maybe just, I'm like, I even as I'm listening to you talk, and I half know what all this is for our listeners, like, could you maybe just go a little bit deeper into like, how would other applications, you know, like, how does this work? Like, decentralized social network of everything.
Yeah. So because you have this kind of unified data layer where the objects within the network are these well-defined things. You can kind of think of maybe if you have a Bitcoin mine audience. So like a transaction on the network is a well-defined protocol thing. So when you see a transaction in any different type, in any wallet on the network, it can understand what it is. It can understand the format. It can parse it. So there's a similar idea on Nostr, where it's like when you send out a like, when you send out a repost, when you send out a tweet, when you send out like your contact, a follow and unfollow, all these things are getting set out onto all these relays, and they're all well understood by potentially any Nostr app that implements that. So one of the examples I'm building soon, a prototype of this, is I want to build kind of like a mail client, like an email client on Nostr. So like imagine, or not even, I won't even go there. There's someone right now is building like an Instagram client on Nostr. So imagine you do a post on Instagram, and then someone who reposts it on that app, that repost might show up on your Twitter client, right? So because of this like unified data format, and so these, all these different apps are generating data that can be consumed by every other app on the network. And this is such a unique thing that's kind of hard. It's hard to wrap your brain around because we don't really have anything like this. But once you start thinking about what that means and what type of like internet and what type of World Wide Web that would be, it means that every app you use could potentially all interoperate with each other using these common data formats. And yeah, so it's actually to facilitate this, I'm working on a new type of web browser. You know, Google Chrome and Firefox and these things were all built for the web, like World Wide Web, which was originally meant for like web, like documents, like basically just like plain text documents and like HTML documents. They were never really meant for applications, but now we could potentially build a new type of browser, which is kind of like a parallel universe from the web. But instead of documents, you actually have applications and these applications can talk to each other. So it's still like a really early idea and I'm still building that out, but it's a different world altogether and it's hard to wrap your brain around.
Yeah, I'm trying my best. So this is like, if you were to put all the social media apps together into one and make it totally uncensorable and allow people to move money seamlessly and uncensorably to each other throughout those things. Have I missed anything or?
So for instance, you could set up a store in the Nostraverse, right? So your own personal store, but you're selling things with Bitcoin. And this store could appear on your Twitter client. It could appear on Instagram. Like Instagram already has stores, right? But that same store can manifest in different ways on like a whole bunch of different apps. Once you have that common spec, that common protocol, we call them NIPs, Nostra Improvement Proposals, like kind of based off BIPs a little bit, Bitcoin. So it's actually not called Nostra Improvement Proposals. It's called Nostra Implementation Possibilities. I guess we wanted to be different. And we also wanted to be kind of goofy because they're called NIPs. But these are the standard documents that other clients can all build toward the same, so that they can all understand the same data and they can all have different interfaces to the same underlying thing. So you can have your storefront, which is like universal across the entire Nostraverse. And then every different type of app will understand that what a storefront means and actually can display your storefront in different ways. And not only that, but like your store could go viral in different ways. Right? There's not only one algorithm anymore. You can have hundreds of algorithms and your store is going viral and your posts are going viral in different time zones and different algorithms. And like as some people, it's a crazy world to think of. And so that's what I'm trying to build toward that vision. But again, it's still kind of hard to wrap your head around.
Yeah, totally. I guess, yeah. So to maybe come back to that sort of like previous question about what are the other things, like what are the biggest challenges in fully realizing this vision?
I think the biggest thing is, you know, we have a lot of onboarding issues in the sense that when people join, you know, there's already new concepts that they're thrown at the people that's thrown at the user, which is the private key. And I know Bitcoiners are used to this concept, having a private key, but having a key associated with your social media account. And if you lose that key, you like lose your account. Like that's kind of a struggle for people. It's never actually been a huge real issue. It's just, there's actually much more common issues than losing keys. Like they log in with their NPub and they don't realize why can't I post? Cause like they didn't log in with their private key. And that's another kind of a cool feature if you've never used a Nostra client, is that you can log in to anyone's account with their public key and see the world from their perspective, which is kind of a crazy thing to think about. Imagine if you took anyone's username on like Instagram and like put it into your client without a password, and then you can log in as them and see the world from their perspective. I'm surprised more apps don't do that, but it's kind of cool that that's a feature. So even just, yeah, so simple things like that is hard for people. And right now, a lot of people see Nostra as just like a social media competitor. So there's actually not a huge incentive for people to join because like the social media space is so saturated. You have Facebook, you have Blue Sky, you have Mastodon, you have Twitter. You know, Twitter has decent free speech, you know, now that Elon's taken over. So people don't really go to Nostra to try to get like decentralized, you know, free speech because like, okay, well, X is good enough and X has really good UX. So we really need to make the sell. Like what is Nostra providing? So that's why I've been trying to pitch this new vision for Nostra. Like, you know, look, the Nostra is not just social media. It's this wider vision, this bigger vision. And so we just need like people to get excited and people to start, you know, making apps on this new protocol. But we're still very, very early.
No doubt. What about the challenge of like these things having to exist inside a centralized app store like Apple? Like to your own point about Apple, you know, turning you guys off, like, you know, well, what is the answer to that?
So the answer that I came to is just stop building apps on their platform. You know, I switched over this new client that I'm building that works on every platform. And even if they block one of my features on the iOS side, then I'm like, well, it doesn't really matter. All my users can still use my app on any other platform, Windows, macOS, Linux, Android. And it's the same app. So that's been my solution. Cause I'm like, I want to build all these cool things with Zaps, but ultimately if the app store is going to be an asshole, then might as well just like, you know, build elsewhere. And I think that's what's going to keep happening is if they, because you can imagine a future like, okay, Zaps are ubiquitous and they're everywhere. Imagine they're as ubiquitous as the hyperlink in a web browser, right? It's like this such a common thing that every app on Nostr is using it. So this idea that they're going to ban the hyperlink is kind of insane. So my goal has always been like, let's try to make these apps as common as the hyperlink. And then they're going to be, we're going to force their hand, because then they either adopt Nostr or people are forced to switch to Android to use Nostr. You know, we're not powerful or big enough yet to like do a huge move like that. But maybe one day if it gets popular, it might be effective.
Yeah, I guess it makes me think about, like, to me, Elon is one of these people who sort of pretends to understand Bitcoin less and less over time. And there's a lot of Bitcoiners on Twitter, a lot of Bitcoin conversation on Twitter, and people who want to see Twitter adopt Bitcoin, like maybe these apps. And no real reason for them to do that, other than that it makes it, like, it's the most rational decision.
I mean, he's introducing the X payment thing, right? So it's going to be fiat payments with an X, heavily KYC, I'm sure, and heavily restricted to certain countries. So that's the vision. Like, he's the PayPal guy. He wants control over the money. He wants to be in control of everything that he gets involved in, right? Even in the, again, I'm not saying this because I'm like an Elon hater. I actually love a lot of, I mean, I have no issues with Elon, but ultimately, you can just tell he's the personality type. He wants to have control over the system, which is incompatible with Bitcoin. That's why I always figured that's why he was never a big Bitcoiner, is that he seems like he's kind of a control freak and he wants to have his fingers in the, you know, in the solution. So
yeah, it's such an interesting thing, like this idea of like he's going to champion free speech on his app that they do still sort of like moderate and own, and force people to use the money that is just not going to ever be Bitcoin or anything near it.
And he removed the Bitcoin hashtag. So I was like, that was like, why'd you have to do that, man?
Totally. Yeah. And also, like, maybe just one more thought on this is like, you know, so Elon has this idea that X is going to become payments network. It's going to be your bank. It's going to be your everything app. And it's almost like, you know, his assumptions ignore what Bitcoin does and will do to money. And now maybe also ignores what Nostr will do to social media.
Yeah, I mean, he always talks about the everything app, but it's such a kind of antiquated way of looking at apps. I think Nostr is much better set up to be the everything app for like all apps. Because, you know, like, what is an everything app? It's like, you just want everything to work together really nicely. So if you have a protocol that enables that, but you still allow other people to build apps within that protocol, then you, in some sense, the everything app is just all of the Nostr apps that work together. And I think that's kind of like what he's going for, but he just doesn't see the proper technical solution. So ultimately, you know, centralization is going to be the biggest liability that he has. Like, he would be smart to implement Nostr on Twitter because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, if a government says you have to take down this post or it will block you from the country, it's like you have to make the decision whether you want the app to exist within Turkey or do you want it to be, you know, censored there. So he's still subject to the laws of the countries he's in that he's operating his businesses. And you saw that in Brazil, as you know, like they threatened to shut him down there and all the people, you know, all the employees got in shit there. So another point I like to make is that, you know, maybe Elon will eventually, I don't know if this will ever happen, but he gets too busy with SpaceX. He's building his Mars colony and his moon colony. He's not like around to manage it. So like ultimately he's going to have to pass that torch to someone to manage it. And they might not have the same, you know, ideals as him, and you still get back to the same issues with censorship. So I always like to say that Nostr, like, we're enforcing free speech at the protocol level. We're not just like, it's not just a promise like it is from Elon, right? So that's kind of the trade-offs. But again, most people aren't really interested in that aspect of it yet, but maybe if there's a lot more censorship in the future, that it'll become a more important thing.
So I get the sense that you hear at times Nostr is a bit of a Bitcoin echo chamber, like a lot of Bitcoin heavy conversation there. People who are finding Nostr, like, are there people, non-Bitcoiners, that find Nostr? And like, what does that group look like?
I'd say like a lot of some of the OG people who are on the network and everyone who joined early on, and a lot of the people on the network they were not Bitcoiners. I know at least 20 to 30 people who became Bitcoiners because of Nostr. I even saw kind of like Ethereum people join and they're like, wait, Bitcoin's fast? They're like, what? I didn't know Bitcoin was fast. They didn't like hear about the Lightning Network. So we're like orange pilling like Ethereum people, we're orange pilling like grandmas, we're like orange pilling like just normal people. And this was the whole point, right? It's just, you know, you don't have to shove it in their face, but you just provide a little button they can click and set up and instantly sign up with the wallet. And then they get to experience what Bitcoin is. Because I think a lot of people, when they first hear Bitcoin, they're like, oh, it's like that scammy investment thing. It's a bunch of like a pump and dump. Like, because if they just listen to the news, they don't really understand it. But if they get to experience it in an app, they're like, oh, this is easy. This is intuitive, you know? So I think that's what's happening. Like, a lot of people are joining and it becomes a Bitcoin echo chamber just because people like using it on the network. But there are some people who join who like really don't like it and they're like, and they end up leaving. So it becomes like a self-reinforced echo chamber. But there's plenty of people and there's plenty of content that don't talk about Bitcoin. And I think it's kind of exaggerated, to be honest.
If you had to imagine like the state of Nostr and Zaps in like 5 years or 10 years or like, you know, dream up, like what is it, where is it going and what does it look like?
Yeah, I mean, about a year or two ago, I would have said like, oh yeah, we're like marching toward world domination. But the reality is it's actually kind of died down a lot since 2 years ago. And a lot of it is because, I guess, I don't know, naturally the people get bored and they move on to things. Another issue we saw is that a lot of the wallets are going away, like the Lightning wallets. There's not many good Lightning wallets you can actually hook into the network anymore. I think I'm probably going to end up using like CoinOS, which is a Vancouver company for my built-in wallet in Domus. But like they're like the only ones that have Nostr Wallet Connect support in like the world that I can find, which is kind of sad. And like, so that was another very surprising thing within the past 2 years that I thought there'd be more options for Lightning stuff. But so I'm like, if CoinOS goes away, I'm going to have to like stop working on Domus and build a Lightning wallet because this is just getting, it's kind of getting ridiculous. But so I'm hoping that we kind of hit some new energy level and people get more excited about it. But reality is it's definitely not as hyped as it was. And so my main focus right now is trying to figure out why that is. And maybe I kind of concluded it's mostly an onboarding issue. Like a lot of people, they join the app and it just like doesn't work and it's janky. And so we just need to increase the fun and of the experience. And that's like a bare minimum thing. Like we're not even doing that. Like a lot of people are like focused on, oh, we need like make Zap, all these Zap features. But if the app isn't good, people won't really care about this app. So, but it's still very early. It's like imagine joining Bitcoin in 2010. That's what it feels like. It's like very early days and it's still very early tech and janky. So
what was Bitcoin like in 2010 and how did you find it that early?
I think I'm such a nerd. I'm just a computer nerd. I think I was on Hacker News and I saw a post about it. I'm like, oh, it seems cool. I knew nothing about Bitcoin. I knew nothing about money. I knew nothing about like Austrian economics. And not many people did. There's this misconception that like you see it when it's at a dollar and you're like, oh, I'm going to buy like 10,000 of it. I'm going to hold it. Like no one saw Bitcoin that way at that point. I remember viscerally looking at him like, oh, it's kind of a fun toy. So I would like, so I think I mined like 20 of it and I just gave it all away to my friends. Like I mined like 20 in a day. It was funny now. Like, oh my God, how much is that? But I would like give Bitcoin to all my friends and like get them use it. But the early days was really just more like, hey, try to get people to even listen to you about it without looking like a crazy person and just try to share it as much as possible, get people to use it. But there wasn't much information about it. It's just a really technical, a bunch of nerds talking about the software. I think I hired like this employee at MonsterCat who was like really into like Austrian economics and then he started explaining to me like why I should hold on to it. If I didn't hire that guy, I feel like I probably wouldn't have any Bitcoin today. So he kind of convinced me to hold on to it really early on. I'm like, it's just, there wasn't a lot of info. And there wasn't even, you know, we didn't go through the experience of the pump and dump schemes yet. Like when Litecoin came out, everyone's like, oh, this is cool. There's like an altcoin. This is fun. There's people building other things. It was like much more positive outlook on altcoins, which was interesting. But then around 2014, 2015, 2016, it started to get really scammy. Even Ethereum was like looked at as positively among Bitcoiners right when it first came out. And then I feel like it was like a learning process. It's like for the last like 14, 15 years, it's just been a really interesting progression and like understanding like what's being built and like how people are scamming people. And that's why eventually like I became Bitcoin only very, very early, probably like 2016, 2015. But yeah, it was something I had to learn painfully.
Yeah, I sometimes feel like the people who are fortunate enough to make that discovery that early had it a little bit easier. Like now people have to sift through all of the different sophisticated arguments of why this shitcoin or that one is like the next whatever. And
but I was inoculated from all that nonsense very early. So now when anything new comes out, I'm like, oh, okay, it's bullshit. It's so much easier. But like you talk to people these days, like, oh, should I buy XRP? I'm like, should I buy Ripple? I'm like, I'm so, that was like me in like 2013. So I'm like, I'm trying to like compress my knowledge of those like 10 of those 5 years to try to explain to them why you shouldn't do that. But I realized that I've actually kind of given up doing that to people. Even if it's like the really close friend, I actually really tried to explain like, look, you don't want to do that. You don't want to trade it. You don't want to leverage it. Just keep buying, buy when it goes down, probably buy when it goes up too. Just keep buying it and hold on to it. But I think there's like this desire to just want to make more off the amount you already have and to leverage it. And it's just usually the biggest mistake that everyone can make. And then you quickly learn your lesson. And I feel like unless you learn that lesson yourself, you don't really understand why. You don't understand why the person telling you to not do it, right? I don't know. So I've stopped giving financial advice. I just like, and I'm just like, whatever, I'm just going to hold and keep buying.
This might be a good question for you in thinking about how to explain the Bitcoin, the protocol, to people, just in terms of actually what a protocol is and what about protocols make them special and unique.
Oh, it's a great question, because like protocols are my favorite thing about computers. So it's funny, because I have a funny story, which is like when I first, because I would talk about protocols all the time inside my house, and my partner's like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, what does protocol even mean? You just use that word all the time. I'm like, oh yeah, I keep using that word. I haven't really defined it. So I always thought of like really clever ways to kind of explain what a protocol is. And I think my favorite one is it's the language that computers use to talk to each other. So in the same sense that humans have like, you know, English and the, you know, spoken languages and writing, protocols are like the language that, you know, two separate computers who might not have ever they don't know anything about each other. They're stranger computers, but they can still talk to each other because there's a standard language. And usually it's encoded as data, some type of like binary data. Some binary data format that's specified. But the minute that two computers can understand the same data, then you can start doing powerful things, because then you can start sending data to that computer and they can understand it. And that computer can start sending data back, and then your computer can understand it. So, and then you start building these applications that can do interesting and useful things. So in the case of Bitcoin, the useful, interesting thing is like creating these digital transactions and, you know, collecting them into a block and which forms a ledger. So the only reason that these programs work is because you have that common protocol, that language that your nodes use to talk to each other.
So then this is where I love the idea is that Bitcoin is a payments protocol for the internet. This is how computers talk to each other and make payments.
Yeah, exactly. So the reason why your phone can make a payment to a server that's like selling you something is because both of those computers understand the same language and they can do the right thing when you initiate the transaction.
How about your thoughts on, to come back one step, we talked about sort of your thoughts on where Nostra is right now. How about your thoughts on where Lightning is right now and the adoption and future of the Lightning network?
Yeah, I mean, so I got in Lightning in 2018. I think I was one of the first five Lightning nodes on the mainnet, which was kind of cool. So actually, it's a funny story. Like the right next to me, there's a Lightning node that's running, and I'm pretty sure it's the oldest running Lightning node on mainnet. It's still running. It's the same one. So I'm a huge Lightning nerd, and I've always loved it because it was like such an elegant solution for the problem of like instant payments on Bitcoin. And I was truly convinced that like everyone would be running a Lightning node, like in their business at least. And then we'll have all of these like applications that talk to your Lightning node, and everyone will be self-sovereign. But like reality struck when I was working on Damas, and I realized that no one did that and no one wants to run a node. And I'm like, oh, I guess it is kind of hard to run a node because you have to open channels, manage channels. And it's a lot harder than running a Bitcoin node. And apparently running a Bitcoin node is too complicated for a lot of people. Even though it's probably the simplest piece of software, maybe I'm biased, but like it's way simpler than running an email server. It's just like you run a program and it works, which is a pretty like, you know, most programs don't just work when you run them. I don't know. Maybe we just suck at software, but Bitcoin is relatively pleasant compared to other software. But yeah, then I realized like, oh, no one's running Lightning nodes. So I'm like, what does that mean then? Does that mean everyone's just going to use custodial Lightning? And that seems to be the case. Like a lot of people are just using custodial Lightning nodes, like Wallet Satoshi. But I started thinking about it some more. I'm like, okay, for small amounts, if you're just getting to Nostra, for instance, and you just want to receive your first app, like you probably don't need like a super secure Trezor hardware wallet with like seed phrases and metal plates and you like, you know, tinfoil hats and, you know, armed like weapons. And I don't know, like some people go really crazy. But if you're just receiving like 1,000 sats, maybe it makes more sense when you get up to a certain limit, like 100,000 sats, and then you can just like swap out to on-chain. So that's kind of the vision where I see Lightning headed to, which is kind of, a lot of people would say that's a very disappointing result for Lightning, but just practically it works. You have non-custody by just swapping your Lightning to on-chain once you have a certain number of custodial Lightning sats. But yeah, I mean, yeah, so I've kind of moved away from this vision that everyone's going to have like their own node and their own non-custodial wallet, because I think it's too hard to do non-custodial Lightning just to manage the channels. So yeah, I mean, that's...
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Block Reward. We're trying to do something different here, creating accessible conversations meant for people who aren't obsessed with Bitcoin. If you found this episode informative and engaging, hit that subscribe button to make sure you stay updated with future episodes. Your feedback matters. We'd greatly appreciate it if you could take a moment to share your reviews and help us with our goal of creating Bitcoin content that is simple and easy to understand. Bitcoin has an important role to play in the future of finance. It will change the way we save, spend, and invest. Discover why Bitcoin offers a game-changing opportunity for forward-thinking employers by visiting blockrewards.ca. Block Reward's mission is helping Canadian employers implement strategies for integrating Bitcoin into compensation and benefits. Supercharge your recruitment and retention strategies and help your team members plan for the rising cost of living by rewarding their work with the hardest money ever invented. Special thanks to our top sponsor, Paramount Employee Benefits Consulting, Canada's only Bitcoin-forward benefits and pension advisory. For more information, find them at paramountbenefits.ca. Big shout out to Podigy, our production team that makes all this possible, and BMX Escape for producing our music. Bitcoin is an expansive and dense topic many people walk away from early. To Bitcoin enthusiasts looking for that podcast they can share with friends, family, and colleagues, one they'll actually listen to, we hope that is us. The content of these conversations is meant to be provided for information purposes only. Nothing here is investment advice. Bitcoin is a big topic. Be sure to do your own research before making any personal financial decisions. Thanks for listening.